Nazis, welcome to the best current year ever on Radio Aryan. I am your host, Fascist Lemming, and yes, it is the best current year ever. Proven October 13th, a Thursday, a day that will go down in history, at least for me personal. Donald Trump gave his most amazing speech ever, and that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to play my highlights of the speeches, which is about 15 minutes. And if you've already heard the speech, it's worth to listen to over and over and over again. It's just absolutely amazing. No one could have predicted this. No one saw this coming. Even these scheming Jews who seem to be 10 steps ahead of us did not see this coming. And their reaction to Donald Trump is proof of that. Maybe this is why they've been kicked out of their host countries dozens of times over the last few millennia. So, yeah, man, I saw his tweet on Thursday morning saying I got a big speech coming up. And, of course, he did the speech in West Palm Beach, which is where Don Black lives. Maybe he did it as a nod. You know, we're all so sensitive to these dog whistles, and the Jews are especially sensitive to these dog whistles. So did he do it so he could be close to Don Black? I don't know. That's kind of a joke. But this speech had 20,000 people in attendance, 10,000 people turned away. The things he said were absolutely amazing, and he's hinted at the things that he said before, and I'm actually going to be playing some of his greatest hits from the campaign that I gathered when I used to do Trump compilations on my YouTube channel. And, you know, he's given hints, you know, like his appearance at the Republican Jewish Coalition. He said a few things that I will be playing for you guys. I think his first economic policy speech is when he said what he said about globalism, which I'm also going to play for you guys. And then we're going to play the highlights. And then I'm going to read a large portion of this very interesting article from a website called counterpunch.com. I've never heard of it. It says it's a leftist website. And this article was actually written by a Jew, which is amazing to me. This might be the most honest Jew I've ever read. Like, I didn't think the guy was Jewish. His name is Jonathan Taylor. As I was reading the article, I was like, well, this guy must be a goy, just based on his reasonable analysis. And then he identifies himself as a Jew. So it's pretty amazing stuff. And, you know, just the whole Jewish reaction to his speech, absolutely hilarious. The best thing since they put echoes around their names on Twitter. Like, Trump talks about, you know, global financial interests and international banks and, you know, the media supporting Clinton. And they're like, oh, globalists, international banks, that's a code word for Jews. Yeah, they're just naming themselves even more, which is hilarious and amazing. But yeah, I just want to tell you, I don't know if y'all have seen the first Matrix movie, but I feel how their aircraft operator felt when he rescued Morpheus with Trinity. And here's what he had to say, and this is how I feel about Trump.
I know it. He's the one. I know it. He's the one.
True story. You know, I was like Morpheus watching Trump throughout this whole campaign. I've only seen positive glimpses that, yes, he is the one. But then he gave this speech in Palm Beach, and it was just like, wow, he is the one. Like, this guy is totally on our side. Anyone who still thinks he's an agent for the Jews at this point is retarded. You know, they're pathological determinists. They think that just because it's been a controlled political system up to this point, that therefore automatically it's literally physically impossible that Trump could be a berserker rogue breaking away from the special club, which he talks about in the speech, which he's talked about the whole campaign. Like, it's absolutely impossible that one of these elites who has the resources to do it would go against the system because he's tired of seeing his country flushed down the drain, being flooded with mud people, you know. We're losing all of our jobs. We're being, you know, indoctrinated with pure pos. You know, it's totally reasonable to me that at some point Trump was like, you know what, maybe I don't want my Jewish grandchildren to grow up in a land full of mud people. But, you know, some of these people, they're they're just obsessed with the tinfoil. It's their religion. And honestly, if you see these so-called pro-whites, you know, and they want to talk about, oh, Trump's an agent, you know, don't even vote for him. Don't vote for Hillary. Just don't even vote. If they're doing anything that keeps people from voting for Trump, I declare that they are absolute traitors to our race easily. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, they're obsessed with they're more conspiracy theorists than they are white nationalists. And they don't realize it. They just LARP as white nationalists, but they're really tinfoil fanatics. But to the rest of us normal people, it's really obvious that Trump is dead serious based on the things that he's done. And, you know, these retards, they talk about, oh, you know, that you can't change the system with politics. It's like, Trump's already changed everything, and we haven't even voted yet. Everything's already been changed. The Republican Party, you know, the age of conservatism, it's done. It's over with. You know, and the DNC and the Democrats, they've been exposed, you know, rigging the system. So these people are just, they're pathological determinists. Like, I hope that makes sense. Like, they think no matter what, it's always controlled. You know, they can ignore all the evidence to the contrary, and they can point out little trivial facts like, you know, Trump's 6 million Jewish ties that he's had. Like, they don't know this concept of a berserker rogue. The dude's gone berserk. He's gone rogue. He's no longer in line with the establishment, the Jewish establishment. And he's just said so many things over the campaign that just makes it absolutely no-brainer that, wow. I mean, I'm not saying he's the next Hitler. He's 1488, but he's at least 1376. Like, he's pretty close to 1488. And the fact that he never mentions white people, that, you know, he knows what's going on. And we've seen tweets from him from a few years ago pointing out, you know, crime statistics. I could go on and on. And I just wanted to get the point across that if you're anti-Trump, then I think you're actually a traitor. Like, you're just, or you're retarded. Okay. You might be working from good intentions, but you're like retarded and you're not helping. Everyone needs to vote for Trump on November 8th. By the way, November 8th, that's 11-8. And 11 times 8 is 88. Also, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but Trump adds up to 88, like T, you know, I don't have the numbers memorized right now, but Trump adds up to 88. Check it out. So there's just so many signs from Keck, you know, praise be unto him. Esoteric Keckism. Everything is going our way this year. This has to be the worst year these Jews have had since 1933, like, blatantly. And it's fun to watch them kvetch on YouTube. So anyway, we're going to get to all that. But yeah, this is basically a Trump's greatest hits. This is a Trump fest. I got about 20 minutes total of Trump, including the highlights from his amazing speech on October 13th, 2016. Best damn current year ever. So I want to start with just this quick clip. I'll never forget how I felt when I heard him say this. I was on the Trump train immediately when I heard his speech at a rally, talking like a normal guy. And he's talking about building a wall. I mean, what more could you possibly ask for than a gigantic wall that is basically a racial border? You know, some of the cucks would be like, well, Mexicans aren't a race, man. Yeah, whatever. It's still like, okay, Mexico and south of that, mud people. Texas and north, white people. Or that's how it was, you know, 50 years ago. That's how it should be. So we're talking about building an absolute barrier, a racial barrier. And that's going to be like a psychological operation to our people. They're going to get used to living with the wall that's keeping these mud people out. It's going to make them more willing to think racially. And we're going to be having wall parties. We're going to be pulling security for the people that build the wall. And then once the wall has been built, we're going to be going to the wall, having book clubs and pool parties and barbecues and just having a grand old time as these mudvaders are prevented from entering our country. And another extremely important bonus is that it's going to dry up our drug supply by like 90%. Almost all of our drugs come out of Mexico. All the heroin and meth It's targeting white people, and it needs to end, and it needs to end quickly, right? So anyway, I was already on the Trump train pretty hardcore by the time I heard him say this, but this was like one of those glimpses, like I'm Morpheus watching Neo, and I'm like, damn, he might be the one. So let's listen. I'm going to play it twice in a row.
And I've become more and more, when you talk about nationalists, you know, say what you want. Some people say, oh, nationalists, that doesn't sound good. I want our country to be great again. I want our country to be great again. And I've become more and more, when you talk about nationalists, you know, say what you want. Some people say, oh, nationalists, that doesn't sound good. I want our country to be great again. I want our country to be great again.
I mean, that was good times. Our candidate officially declaring himself as a nationalist. I mean, that was like a sign of good things to come. And boy, did good things come. So the next highlight was an amazing day. I believe it was December 3rd when he addressed the Republican Jewish Coalition. And I was worried that he was going to say some things. And yes, he did give this lip service that he's been giving them. But at this point, he said so many other things that are 6 million times more impactful and serious than his obvious half-hearted lip service to Israel, which he basically only gives when asked for, you know, by reporters or whatever. Like, you listen to his rallies. He's given, you know, hundreds of rallies since the campaign started. And I say 99% of those rallies, he never mentioned Israel once. So what's up with that? Meanwhile, you had Cruz getting booed and leaving an event because he said, if you're not with the Jews, then I'm not with you. Like, there's obvious difference of, you know, Israel lip service that you see. But anyway, here are some of the highlights that were absolutely amazing. They speak for themselves, so let's listen.
I'm a negotiator like you folks. We're negotiators. Do you want to renegotiate deals? Some of us renegotiate deals. I would say about 99.9. Is there anybody that doesn't renegotiate deals in this room? This room negotiates. I want to renegotiate this room. Perhaps more than any room I've ever spoken to. Maybe more. It's okay. I've been called on that a couple of times too. You're not going to support me, even though you know I'm the best thing that could ever happen to Israel. And I'll be that. And I know why you're not going to support me. And, you know, you're not going to support me because I don't want your money. You don't want to give me money, okay? But that's okay. You want to control your own politician. That's fine. Good. But I will tell. Think about that, folks. Don't worry about it. I understand. Hey, 5 months ago, I was with you. Who was better than me?
Simply amazing. And you can wear all the tinfoil you want. There's absolutely not been one person running for president who would dare to speak to a room full of Jews like that. You know, telling them straight up, you won't support me because I don't want your money and you like to control your politicians. He said 99.9% of the room are negotiators. Like, no one would dare speak to a room. Look at how powerful those Jews are in that room. That's a Republican Jewish coalition. It's not like you're a friendly, slimy Jew living down the street. You know, these are powerful people. It's just amazing. You know, so great. And guess what? He's going to win, guys. Like, I know there's been a lot of gaslighting from the media. And, you know, I've been receiving messages from people saying, man, you know, I'm just not sure. And I'm seeing people talk more about preparing for a Hillary victory. Look, I'm all in for Trump. I'm not thinking about a Hillary victory. If that happens, which it won't, but let's just say hypothetically, because I guess it is, you know, physically possible that it could happen. They could steal the election, you know, whatever. Dude, it's not going to happen, all right? But even if it did, I will cross that bridge when I get there. And for all y'all who are worried, no, I'm not going to kill myself if Trump loses. I've had like two or three people be like, hey, man, don't do anything crazy if he loses. Like, he's not going to lose. All the polls are BS. You know, especially based on what he said in the speech, which I'm going to play, even though most of you have already heard it. I mean, they will do anything to stop him from winning. It's obvious. It's so obvious if you watch the way these Jews are reacting and, you know, just the establishment in general, not only the Jews, but they're at the center of it and they have all the power. But, you know, all these anti-whites and everybody, they're frantically, hysterically against Trump. So they'll do whatever it takes. And like Trump says, if it wasn't for the media, Hillary couldn't be elected dog catching. And look at the rallies. She gets like, you know, two people, and he gets like 6 million people every rally. I mean, these people are going to go vote, okay? And I know there's a lot of worries about, you know, demographics. But just remember, guys, mud people don't have as much agency as white people do. We need to have more faith in our people. I think Trump's going to win, hopefully by a landslide, so it can't really be stolen from him. You know, it's possible maybe that they'll try to pull some stunt with Russia before the election. That's possible, but my gut tells me that's not going to happen. But I hope I'm right that nothing crazy like that happens. So anyway, back to the greatest hits. My next favorite one was the most half-assed, you know, non-committal disavowal of David Duke you've ever heard. And it's like he doesn't even care. And it's funny how these Jews kvetch. Like I've seen Jonathan Greenblatt over the months complaining, you know, Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL complaining that he can't get a hold of Trump. He wants to talk to Trump and tell him that he needs to disavow his anti-Semitic fans. But he doesn't, you know, like that one time he said, I don't have a message for the fans. When Wolf Blitzer was telling him about how we attacked Julia Yaffe. Oh, those were good times. And you gotta love Melania Trump saying, oh yeah, Julia Yaffe, she provoked it with her hit piece on me. So it's good times. But yeah, here's the best disavowal of David Duke you've ever heard.
Yes, go ahead. I didn't even know he endorsed me. David Duke endorsed me? Okay. All right. I disavow. Okay?
We're playing chess here at a high level.
Oh, that's good. And I know David Duke agrees with me because he mentions that disavow often. Like, that was definitely the best one. Just like, all right, whatever. Whatever you want. Just let it be. And you know, they haven't brought David Duke much lately. Maybe they'll bring him up in the debate tonight. Oh, man, it's going to be amazing. I'm recording this on Tuesday, but you're listening to this on Wednesday. Boy, oh boy, is that debate going to be wonderful. Hillary better not pull out. That would be so lame if the debate was canceled. I don't think it will be, though. I don't think she's going to do that. It's going to be very fun. Apparently, immigration is going to be one of the topics. So we're gonna let Donald Trump talk about building the wall to tens of millions of people on national TV, international TV. Okay, so this next clip was probably the one moment throughout this whole campaign that made me the most excited I've ever been. It was a few days before Christmas. It was an early birthday present. I was just sitting here on my couch minding my own business watching a Trump rally when all of a sudden I could hear a heckler in the audience screaming at Trump, and I could have sworn he said something about Jews and 9/11, and I was like, now I must be tripping. Like, I must be tripping, dog. Did he really just say this? So I played it back and I realized, wow, this guy's saying that Jews got arrested on 9/11. And then Trump was just like really nice to the guy and said he's one of us. And I made a YouTube video about it. I was laughing and giggling. I was all giddy like a little schoolgirl. Like Trump doesn't mind if you name the Jew. That's what I named that video. But I'm going to play this clip for you guys, and it's actually, I took this from a YouTube channel called Lay America Bear. That's L-E-A-M-E-R-I-G-A Bear. Fantastic channel. Check it out and subscribe to it. But he spliced it up perfectly to where you can get the real sense of how it went down. So let's have a listen.
But, you know, he's a big Hillary fan.
Hey, Trump, hey.
Maybe see.
Listen to me, Trump. Jews were arrested on 9/11 in New Jersey,
go
not
away,
Muslims. Jews, five Jews, you got it?
He's all right. He's okay. Relax, relax, relax. Take it easy. He's very committed. Relax. He's actually a Trump guy. He's just...
Five Jews, Donald. Hey, let go of me, dude. Relax. Hey, he's five Jews, Donald. Dancing and raving. Israel did 9/11.
Okay. He's actually a Trump guy. He's just got a lot of energy. Okay.
Hey, Israel did 9/11, all right?
Okay, sit down. Relax.
Dancing Israeli. You're a Zionist.
He's on our side. Who would know it, but he's on our side.
So yeah, absolutely amazing. He's like, Jews were arrested on 9/11 and you're a Zionist. And Trump's like, yeah, just sit down. He's one of us guys. He's really committed. I mean, that was just something else, especially at the time, you know, gotten kind of used to it by now, like all these amazing little things that happened in his campaign. So the next clip I'm going to play for you guys is the first time he mentioned opening up the libel laws against the media, you know, so we can shut their lying Jewish mouths for them, right? So let's take a listen.
Washington Post, I have to tell you, I have respect for Jeff Bezos, but he bought the Washington Post to have political influence. And I got to tell you, we have a different country than we used to have. We have a different, he owns Amazon. He wants political influence so that Amazon will benefit from it. That's not right. And believe me, if I become president, oh, do they have problems. They're going to have such problems. And one of the things I'm going to do, and this is only going to make it tougher for me, and I've never said this before, but one of the things I'm going to do if I win, and I hope I do, and we're certainly leading, is I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws. So that when the New York Times writes a hit piece, which is a total disgrace, or when the Washington Post, which is there for other reasons, writes a hit piece, we can sue them and win money instead of having no chance of winning because they're totally protected. You see, with me, they're not protected because I'm not like other people, but I'm not taking money. I'm not taking their money. So we're going to open up those libel laws, folks, and we're going to have people sue you like you never got sued before.
So, yeah, just absolutely amazing stuff. And, you know, he hasn't really talked about the libel laws, you know, since the primaries at all. He only mentioned it a few times. But you can tell by the way the media is treating him now in this last month that he's definitely going to open up these libel laws just based on these vicious attacks. You know, you had Pussygate and the Grabacost, which has turned out to be a fantastic source of memes, definitely. And then they trot out all these women who are just flat out lying. Like, it's not even close to being true. It's like a total act of desperation. And it's all the media wants to talk about, or the mainstream American media at least. You know, meanwhile, you know, we're saber-rattling with Russia, you know, threatening Russia with cyber attacks and blaming Russia for all these so-called hacks. I mean, and all the media wants to talk about are these fake sexual assault and sexual harassment allegations. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd and it's outrageous, to be honest. So I was home with my parents this weekend and just seeing, well, I got home Thursday, and just to watch Megyn Kelly spin the first hat, because, you know, my parents, you know, keep it on Fox pretty much. It's like the default channel in the house. And she spends, like, the first half hour talking about these fake sexual harassment allegations, and then spends, like, 5 minutes on WikiLeaks. It's just so triggering. And thankfully, you know, Sean Hannity is pretty amazing. You know, a year and a half ago, you could not have told me that I would be a fan of Sean Hannity at this point in time, because I've definitely always hated him since I was a leftist libertarian as a teenager, to being a flat out Ancapistan, to being the conspirator of Alex Jones tier. And even up until the Trump's candidacy, Sean Hannity was someone I did not like, someone who was very oven-worthy and needed to be gassed immediately. But, you know, he's really done good this whole election. He's always been there behind Trump. And I hear that he has the highest rated show now, which is great. You know, he beat out Megyn Kelly. They need to give him his spot back and just totally get rid of Megyn Kelly. But anyway, it's just good times all around. And all right, just the final clip I want to show just real quick is when he really came out openly against globalism. Good times.
We will no longer surrender this country or its people to the false song of globalism. The nation state remains the true foundation for happiness and harmony.
You know what, President Trump? I could not have said that better myself. So those are my Trump's greatest hits. There were definitely more. Oh my gosh, actually, I forgot this one. I'm glad I remembered. I would have kicked myself if I would have forgotten this. But this was right after the Cologne attacks in Germany. I remember when that story came out a few days after New Year's Eve and just how like black-pilled and rustled and just angry I was that this is happening and being allowed to happen. And then Trump comes out at a rally and says this.
So we have a little situation that could be a Trojan horse. You looked at what's happening in Germany and Cologne. Cologne never had a problem. Cologne, Germany. Okay? Everything's fine. Everything's nice, clean, beautiful, no problem. Now they're having riots. They're having rapes. The New Year's Eve has, have you heard about the New Year's Eve? It was like a disaster. And the German people are going to riot. The German people are going to end up overthrowing this woman. I don't know what the hell she's thinking. But they have millions of people pouring into Germany, and now they're not stopping them. Now I guess they're going to have to stop them because the German people aren't going to put up.
So there you have it, folks. The fact that he would say that, you know, the Mudvasion is destroying Germany and Merkel's going to get overthrown. I mean, that is not something an agent of the skies would say. It's just absolutely absurd. And, you know, I know I harp on that so much just because I get so many comments from people, you know, trying to act smart and say, oh, Trump's a Jew shield. It's just absolutely absurd. And it is wrestling, and that's why I'm harping on it. So anyway, guys, we are about to listen to about 15 minutes of absolute proof that Trump is actually a berserker rogue, as I have said from day one, or day one for me getting on the Trump train, which was late July 2016 or 2015, excuse me. So we are going to listen to this. This is absolutely amazing. If you haven't heard this before, you're in for a treat. So let's check it out.
Our movement is about replacing a failed and corrupt, and when I say corrupt, I'm talking about totally corrupt, political establishment with a new government controlled by you, the American people. There is nothing the political establishment will not do, no lie that they won't tell, to hold their prestige and power at your expense, and that's what's been happening. The Washington establishment and the financial and media corporations that fund it exist for only one reason: to protect and enrich itself. The establishment has trillions of dollars at stake in this election. As an example, just one single trade deal they'd like to pass involves trillions of dollars controlled by many countries, corporations, and lobbyists. For those who control the levers of power in Washington and for the global special interest, they partner with these people that don't have your good in mind. Our campaign represents a true existential threat like they haven't seen before. This is not simply another four-year election. This is a crossroads in the history of our civilization that will determine whether or not we, the people, reclaim control over our government. The political establishment that is trying to stop us is the same group responsible for our disastrous trade deals, massive illegal immigration, and economic and foreign policies that have bled our country dry. It's a global power structure that is responsible for the economic decisions that have robbed our working class, stripped our country of its wealth, and put that money into the pockets of a handful of large corporations and political entities. The Clinton machine is at the center of this power structure. We've seen this firsthand in the WikiLeaks documents in which Hillary Clinton meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends, and her donors. So true. Honestly, she should be locked up. Should be. Should be locked up. And likewise, the emails show that the Clinton machine is so closely and irrevocably tied to the media organizations that she listen to this, is given the questions and answers in advance of her debate performance with Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton is also given approval and veto power over quotes written about her in the New York Times. They definitely do not do that to me, that I can. And the emails show the reporters collaborate and conspire directly with the Clinton campaign on helping her win the election all over. With their control over our government at stake, with trillions of dollars on the line, the Clinton machine is determined to achieve the destruction of our campaign. Not going to happen. Which has now become a great, great movement, the likes of which our country has never seen before, never ever. The most powerful weapon deployed by the Clintons is the corporate media, the press. Let's be clear on one thing. The corporate media in our country is no longer involved in journalism. They're a political special interest, no different than any lobbyist or other financial entity with a total political agenda. And the agenda is not for you, it's for themselves. And their agenda is to elect crooked Hillary Clinton at any cost, at any price, no matter how many lives they destroy. For them, it's a war. And for them, nothing at all is out of bounds. This is a struggle for the survival of our nation, believe me. And this will be our last chance to save it on November 8th. Remember that. This election will determine whether we are a free nation or whether we have only the illusion of democracy, but are in fact controlled by a small handful of global special interests rigging the system, and our system is rigged. This is reality. You know it, they know it, I know it, and pretty much the whole world knows it. The establishment and their media enablers wield control over this nation through means that are very well known. Anyone who challenges through means that are very well known. Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. They will attack you. They will slander you.
They will seek to destroy your career and your family. They will seek to destroy everything about you, including your reputation. They will lie, lie, lie. And then again, they will do worse than that. They will do whatever's necessary. The Clintons are criminals. Remember that. They're criminals. This is part of a concerted effort led by the New York Times and others. Now, the New York Times is fighting desperately for its relevance and its financial survival. And it probably won't even be around in a few years based on its financial outlook, which wouldn't be a bad thing if you want to know the truth. But as it winds down its years and it's becoming more and more problematic, it's gotten more and more vicious, more and more vile. And even the other mainstream media is talking about the single greatest pylon in history, and all between now and November 8th. And you have to see the stories they've written. It's one after another after another. And facts mean nothing. Third-rate journalism. The great editors of the past from the New York Times and others, ladies and gentlemen, are spinning in their grave. I will not allow the Clinton machine to turn our campaign into a discussion of their slanders and lies, but will remain focused on the issues facing the American people. I've seen firsthand the corruption and the sickness that has taken over our politics. You've seen it, and I've seen it, and we're all watching together. They knew they would throw every lie they could at me and my family and my loved ones. They knew they would stop at nothing to try to stop me. But I never knew, as bad as it would be, I never knew it would be this vile, that it would be this bad, that it would be this vicious. Nevertheless, I take all of these slings and arrows gladly for you. I take them for our movement so that we can have our country back. Our great civilization here in America and across the civilized world has come upon a moment of reckoning. We've seen it in the United Kingdom, where they voted to liberate themselves from global government and global trade deals and global immigration deals that have destroyed their sovereignty and have destroyed many of those nations. But the central base of world political power is right here in America. And it is our corrupt political establishment that is the greatest power behind the efforts at radical globalization and the disenfranchisement of working people. Their financial resources are virtually unlimited. Their political resources are unlimited. Their media resources are unmatched. And most importantly, the depths of their immorality is absolutely unlimited. This is a conspiracy against you, the American people, and we cannot let this happen or continue. This is our moment of reckoning as a society and as a civilization itself. In my former life, I was an insider as much as anybody else. And I knew what it's like, and I still know what it's like to be an insider. It's not bad. It's not bad. Now I'm being punished for leaving the special club and revealing to you the terrible things that are going on having to do with our country. Because I used to be part of the club, I'm the only one that can fix it. I'm doing this for the people and for the movement, and we will take back this country for you, and we will make America great again. The corrupt establishment knows that we are a great threat to their criminal enterprise. They know that if we win, their power is gone and it's returned to you, the people. Will be. The dark clouds hanging over our government can be lifted and replaced with a bright future. But it all depends on whether we let the corrupt media decide our future, or whether we let the American people decide our future. But you look at the inner cities and you see bad education, no jobs, no safety. You walk to the grocery store with your child and you get shot. You walk outside to look and see what's happening and you get shot. In Chicago, 3,000 people have been shot since January 1st. We're not going to let that happen. Our Independence Day is at hand, and it arrives finally on November 8th. Join me in taking back our country and creating a bright, glorious, and prosperous new future for our people. We will make America great again, and it will happen quickly. God bless you. God bless you. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely historical, monumental stuff right there. And I've been watching his rallies ever since. You know, for a while there, I was blackpilled that he was using teleprompters. But ever since this speech, I'm watching because I'm very interested now. So one of the best aspects of this speech was the reaction of the Jewish establishment and all these Jews on Twitter. And we're going to go over some of these headlines and some of the stuff written in these articles. And the first one is a headline from Daily Kos. At long last, Trump blames the Jews for his failed campaign. Oh. All right, next headline from Vox. It's time to acknowledge reality. Donald Trump talks like an anti-Semite. He especially did at the Republican Jewish Coalition. So this article is written by Yochi Driesen, which is a weird name, must be Jewish. And he writes some good hysterics here. There's no more doubting it, no more excusing it, no more defending it, no more trying to explain it away. We're past the time when having a Jewish son-in-law makes it okay to spew paranoia and conspiracy theories. A line has finally been crossed, and we need to acknowledge a cold and very scary truth. Donald Trump is openly trafficking in the types of anti-Semitic slurs that have been used to justify the hatred of Jews for decades. Oh, these Jews just naming themselves. It's very awesome. I had a lot more, but I'm sorry, guys. I'm about to be reading a lot to y'all, like more than I've read to y'all since I started this show. This show on this great network, Radio Aryan. Make sure you check it out, radioaryan.com. You got Matthew Heimbach, you got Dennis Wise, you got Grandpa Lampshade, and you have others that I can't think of at the moment, but great stuff. Check out the website. So anyway, next headline from Mother Jones. Trump attacks his accusers in his most extreme, angry, and unhinged speech yet. Did that speech sound unhinged to you? They like to just throw these words out there. Of course, when I describe Jews as unhinged, I'm actually correct. I'm not just throwing that out there. Like, they got parentheses around their names. They are unhinged. And just a quick excerpt from that article. Throughout the speech, Trump used harsh language that evoked old and ugly anti-Semitic conspiracy theories about international bankers who supposedly infiltrate national governments and control the global agenda. I like how he says that he used harsh language that evoked old and ugly anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Like, why you gotta say old and ugly? Are we 3 years old? Or I guess their audience are 3 years old. They gotta use terms like old and ugly, you know, very childish language. And yes, you know, there are international bankers, and it's not supposedly, they do infiltrate national governments and control the global agenda. It continues. Citing recent Clinton campaign emails published by WikiLeaks, Trump told the crowd that Clinton meets in secret with international banks in order to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty. Oh man, that's why it's such a damn good speech saying stuff like that. Echoing the rhetoric of Alex Jones and other conspiracy theorists, Trump repeatedly referred to globalists as the true enemy and Clinton as their handmaiden. It is true, the globalists are enemy. And, you know, I'm okay with the term globalist if I know the person use it is solid. The person using it is solid on the JQ, you know. When Alex Jones talks about globalists, he's talking about Nazis for some weird delusional reason. Maybe he's lying. I mean, who knows? He was crying because he was called a Nazi in a recent video he published. So who knows? Maybe he's just delusional. He's probably lying, though. He likes those shekels. I mean, we all like the shekels, you know. We kind of need them to pay rent and stuff. But he likes them a lot more than most people. So, this next one from Ross Story. Trump just gave an anti-Semitic speech dripping with hatred. And the internet is horrified. How can you say the internet is horrified? It's just like all these stories like, well, there was a big backlash to this thing you said, or all these people are upset. Like, who are these people you're talking to? Who are these people you're talking about? Excuse me. It's the Jews in the media. They're acting like, they want to act like everybody's mad. When they get mad at someone, they write in their articles that everyone was offended by it. It's ridiculous. So there's all these funny tweets that this Raw Story article highlights. And, I'm just going to read the tweets. We're not going to bother with who tweeted them. So the first one. So it was those shekels that kept Trump from going completely anti-Semitic? Did Trump actually say this? Because if you don't think this statement has anti-Semitic undertones, then you're not thinking clearly. Whenever I conclude nothing Trump can say could shock me, he ups the ante. Today he went full tilt Mussolini. Is he quoting Hitler next? Trump adding full-blown, unabashed, anti-Semitic code words to his stump speech. Bannon is CEO of the Trump campaign. Bannon is passionately anti-Semitic. Trump equals the Joseph Goebbels Memorial Big Lie candidate. That one makes me laugh because it claims that Bannon is passionately anti-Semitic. Give me a break. I'm a real anti-Semite. You're probably a real anti-Semite. Bannon is not an anti-Semite at all. He's a joke. He's a mess. He's a disgrace. Next. Trump's speech right now is very close to fascism, laugh out loud. America first and all that. Almost messianic in some ways. Thought Phoenix anti-immigrant speech was pink. Let me restart. Thought Phoenix anti-immigration speech was peak Trump fascism. Today he outdid himself, promising bright, glorious future. Sounds very 1930s. Trump's apocalyptic speech in Florida makes plain that he and his movement are the face of fascism, traveling under the banner of America First. I sure do love that America First slogan, though. That's great. Problem with Trump is not that he's a fascist demagogue. It's that he's a fascist demagogue with 40% support. Win or lose, we have a problem. Oh, that's right. You have a problem that's not going away because the age of anti-white liberal kikery is coming to an end. Period. Whether Trump wins or loses, the jig is up. We have the internet. That's our main weapon anyway. And that was social media. And, you know, phones with cameras and everything. The jig is up for them. Because we have the truth on our side. Next one. Tell me again that Trump and his campaign aren't anti-Semitic. This Trump speech is as fascist as they've come. The anti-Semitism is so goddamn strong, it's frightening. Trump's speech is like something you hear on AM radio at 3 a.m., plus a heaping side of fascism. There is so much that's grotesque about Trump, it's hard to keep track. But why isn't anyone calling out anti-Semitism? That's funny that they claim that no one's calling it out. Some of these people... See, this is what unhinged is. When you complain that no one's calling out Trump's, you know, supposed anti-Semitism, when literally the entire Jewish community damn near is calling out his supposed anti-Semitism. All right, just two more. The anti-Semitism of the Trump campaign has not gotten enough attention. The unleashed Trump is going full-on Jew baiting here. And last but not least, Trump back to anti-Semitic dog whistle. In the last 10 years, we've heard a lot of Hitler comparisons. They fell short then, they don't now. And guess what? I agree. I've said that before. If anyone could ever be compared to Hitler in our recent political history, presidential politics, Trump definitely takes the cake for most in common with Hitler. I'm not saying he is Hitler. I'm just saying he's the closest, easily. All right, guys. So I know that was a lot of reading, and unfortunately, I have a lot more to read to you guys. But this article is just absolutely amazing. So the headline of the article is Trump, Anti-Globalism, and the Anti-Semitism Slur. And it's written by this guy named Jonathan Taylor. And it's just amazing because this guy is a Jew, and this is from counterpunch.org. And, yeah, it's a lot to read, but it's worthy because, I mean, honestly, this guy is on point. It's just one of those things that happens in life. So let's go ahead and knock this out. There are few tactics in contemporary politics more effective than labeling your opponent as an anti-Semite. So as Donald Trump's campaign continues to ramp up its radical populism, Trump's attacks on global elites are increasingly being characterized as anti-Semitism. It's as if every time Trump exorciates a Washington insider or international corporate power broker, he really wants to say Jew. At least that's the charge by numerous members of the media, many of whom are Jewish themselves. Just listen to Luis Minch, ostensibly a conservative blogger for Heat Street, who WikiLeaks just outed as a Hillary campaign helper. She says, globalist is a racist code word for Jew because there are none. Free trade between sovereign nations is not a wish to abolish the former. By Minch's convoluted logic, since globalists don't want to completely destroy national sovereignty, they aren't really globalists. Therefore, when people say globalists, they must mean Jews. Or let's hear from the Republican campaign strategist and never-Trumper Rick Wilson. Globalist, why don't you just say Jew and get it over with? Then there's Brett Stevens from Wall Street Journal, who demanded conservative columnist Laura Ingraham be fired for using the term globalist cabal. Globalist cabal is an anti-Semitic dog whistle of the first order. Fox News should act, Stevens insisted. And Luis Minch again. Globalist is like Zionist or Zios, the new anti-Semitic code word for Jews. Distressing news, no doubt, to anti-Zionist Jews and critics of Israel, who are used to being spuriously accused of anti-Semitism. Then there's neocon blowhard Jamie Kirchick's response to an incoherent tweet by Paul Ryan challenger Paul Nealon about Ryan staffer Dan Senor. With globalist advisors like Dan Senor, it's no... Oh, wait, that's... Okay, hold on. That's Nealon tweeting. So, with globalist advisors like Dan Senor, it's no wonder Paul Ryan is to the left of Hillary Clinton on TPP. To which Kirchick responded, why don't you just say Jew? Senor is indeed Jewish and is rumored to be the person who leaked the infamous Trump-Billy Bush pussy tape to the press. Further down in this article, he writes, as the election looms, the media are busy cranking up Jewish paranoia to 11. As the unflappably cool Matthew Iglesias surmises, my guess is that in a Trump administration, angry mobs will beat and murder Jews and people of color with impunity. Oh, man, I'm so glad there's people out there who really think that. That's going to be so funny when Trump wins. And these people literally think there's going to be angry mobs out killing Jews on the streets. That's not going to happen. It's just funny that people think that's going to happen. In the wake of Trump's October 13th speech, reporter Travis Geddes informed his readers that Trump's very reference to international banks at all was anti-Semitic. His article for Raw Story was just a series of breathlessly fear-mongering tweets, all of which I just read to you. So further in the article, he writes, "Tactically speaking, the primary purpose of an accusation of anti-Semitism is to end the debate. So if someone says globalist is a code word for Jews, or blaming international banks for economic problems is anti-Semitic, the function of this is to ensure that globalists and international banks cannot be blamed. It's as if someone responded to the Occupy movement that the 1% is a code word for Jews, so we should stop talking about wealth disparity." And that's actually funny because I think 40% of the 1% are Jews. It's the number I've heard, 40 to 60%. He continues, "The ramifications are obvious. Leave the global elites out of this campaign or you're a Jew-hating bigot. And by the way, here comes the ADL. Second, by making this association, these supposed defenders of the Jews are in fact the ones at risk of fostering anti-Semitism." And this is why we love these Jewish responses, because they're naming themselves. Like he says, they're the ones fostering anti-Semitism. That's why it's so funny. "If globalists are conflated with Jews by Jews, then doesn't that mean that globalists are Jews? If international bankers is a cover for anti-Semitism, then by simple deduction, most international bankers must be Jewish," which of course is true. Or if it's not most of them, they're widely overrepresented, so it's the same difference. "The mind reels at the notion that suggesting these ideas is some sort of pushback against..." Wait, hold on, let me... Okay, yeah, I was right. Sorry, guys. "The mind reels at the notion that suggesting these ideas is some sort of pushback against the actual anti-Semitism found among those who discuss the Jewish question on the alt-right. And of course, the alt-right trolls read these tweets, chuckle, and say they knew it all along." Well, of course we did, because it's true. "For those sitting on the sidelines, a logical response to these accusations of anti-Semitism is to start wondering about just exactly how Jewish the global elites really are. Of course, this is way beyond anything Trump is asking his supporters to do. Trump does not name the Jew, as segments of the alt-right wish he did." He comes close enough. I am fully satisfied. But you can see how, like, honest this author is. It's pretty amazing. He's well said, but I have two more paragraphs and we're going to call it a day. "Trump's Jewish attackers want to pretend that Trump is an anti-Semite and all of his attacks on globalist institutions or individuals is a personal attack on Jews. That's preposterous and projection. Trump's Jewish attackers don't want to admit their Jewish privilege. We Jews, yes, I'm one, are the wealthiest religious group in America and the second richest ethnic group behind Indian Americans." Can someone double check that for me? Are Indians, I guess he's referring to dothead Indians, obviously, are they really better off than the Jews? That seems pretty hard to believe, but this guy's pretty honest, so I guess it's probably true. "For our tiny size, we are by far the most politically influential. The worlds of finance, media, journalism, and law are home to extremely disproportionately high numbers of Jews. Leading globalist institutions like the World Bank, IMF, and WTO have high numbers of Jewish executives and staffers, as do organizations such as the Council on Foreign Relations, which one informal estimate claims is around 50% Jewish. Half of the U.S.'s billionaires are Jewish. Jewish donors play an enormous role in funding Hillary Clinton's campaign. The normally Republican and predominantly Jewish neoconservatives have thrown their support behind Hillary. None of this is evidence of conspiracy. Jews are overrepresented in many other fields as well, such as mathematics, physics, medicine, philosophy, etc. Wow, I wonder why all those fields have been driven into the ground and basically worthless at this point. Especially medicine. Wow, really? You wonder why we have so many autis and beta males running around? Might have something to do with people being prescribed Adderall and Ritalin and depression drugs when they're children, man. It's, oh, dude, that's wrestling, so we're just going to keep going. Jews like to argue with each other and with Gentiles, and anybody positing a unified Jewish perspective on any issue has obviously never had Shabbat dinner with a typical Jewish extended family, but claims that Jews are using their disproportionate wealth and influence to support Hillary Clinton are in fact true. Good job, Jew. Good job. Bringing up anti-Semitism then just reminds people of how much influence and power Jews have. Casually hurling charges of anti-Semitism at critics of globalism is incredibly ill-advised and unhelpful. That's why we love it. Oh man, it's great. Keep those parentheses around your names while you're at it. Trump's critique of globalism, global elite corruption, and the role of bankers in global affairs is not anti-Semitic, but the people who allege that it is are the ones who actually foster anti-Semitism while simultaneously protecting globalism and globalist institutions from critique. Anti-Semitism is on the rise in some parts of the alt-right, or I'd say pretty much every part of the alt-right, except for the people who are just posing as alt-right. There's no need to make it worse by shaming people who criticize global elites. So yeah, I just thought that was a pretty amazing. You know, I did not think the guy was a Jew when I read this article until he said he was a Jew. I don't know, y'all might not be impressed by that as much as I am, but like, that is seriously some good stuff. Anyway, guys, moving on. Before we wrap up the show, I want to play about 6 minutes worth of commentary from two of my favorite alt-right commentators from MSNBC, A.M. Joy and Christopher Hayes. Yeah, they're totally paused and they're the enemies, but it's always interesting to listen to what they have to say when they're talking about us. So let's have a listen and call it a day.
Hillary Clinton meets in secret with international banks to plot the destruction of U.S. sovereignty in order to enrich these global financial powers, her special interest friends, and her donors. The election is being rigged by corrupt media pushing completely false allegations and outright lies in an effort to elect her president.
Welcome back to AM Joy. Donald Trump has spent this week going full-on conspiracy theorist, alleging a global cabal of international financiers colluding with the Clintons to bring him down. And the Anti-Defamation League, which combats anti-Semitic and other hate speech, had this response. Whether intentionally or not, Donald Trump is evoking classic anti-Semitic themes that have historically been used against Jews and still reverberate today. Mr. Trump focused on the very issues and themes that obsess conspiratorial anti-Semites. They believe that there is an elite group of Jews who control the media, the government, and banking, and who are trying to destroy white America. The Trump campaign did not respond to our request for comment. And here with me, Michelle Bernard, Democratic strategist Jamal Simmons, The Washington Post's Dana Milbank, and former RNC Chair Michael Steele. All right, so I'm going to come to you first on this, Dana. This is something that has been brewing in the background of the Trump campaign ever since he brought on Steve Bannon of the alt-right, Breitbart.com, and since there was such enthusiasm by people in the neo-Nazi movement for his candidacy. What do you make of the candidate himself now spewing ideas that the ADL recognized as dog whistles against Jewish people?
I think he's been doing this all along. And if any one of these things were sort of a one-off, you would say, well, that may be a coincidence. But it's sort of this choreographed ballet of the alt-right here. We've had these constantly retweeting neo-Nazis. Yep. Just a week earlier, he used the word bloodsuckers to talk about people who support international trade, a classic anti-Semitic dog whistle. His supporters have been going after Jewish journalists like me and others. And he has said, you know, he has nothing to say to his supporters when they do that. Melania Trump has said, well, maybe the Jewish journalists provoke that sort of thing. We've seen, you know, images of Nazis on an American flag tweeted and then removed. So there's been just, there's this footsie over and over again, not as overt as it's been with African Americans, with Latinos, with women. After all, he does have a daughter who is Jewish and grandchildren who are Jewish, so that insulates him a bit. But, you know, when he goes after all those other groups, the Jews are never far behind.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Mother Jones has, Jamal, a piece out, a pretty scathing piece titled How Donald Trump Took Hate Groups Mainstream. I'll just read a quick quote from it. It says, and this is our number two for our elements, for my producers, Trump's enduring campaign tactics, from calls for black protesters to be roughed up to the circulation of racist, anti-Muslim, and anti-Semitic language and memes as proof for far-right extremists that white nationalism has not only arrived, but has found a champion in a major party nominee for president of the United States. So even whatever he intends, neo-Nazis and people who are white nationalists read this as support.
Fair point. You know, anti-Semitism obviously is a powerful charge, and I'm not saying that the speech is anti-Semitic or that Donald Trump is. There's a worldview out of which that has a sort of familial relationship to. It's the worldview you hear on InfoWars. It's part of the worldview of Breitbart and Bannon, this kind of idea of a total conspiracy that is aligned against the good and the righteous and the sort of the woke as represented by Donald Trump. I mean, that is kind of coming from that campaign. That's what that campaign is mainlining right now. Isn't that true?
I mean, it's certainly steeped in that ethos, and if you look at the campaign chairman and where he comes from, then yeah, but I think there's also a kind of, we've reached a stage where there's really a kitchen sink approach where, you know, Trump is in a bunker with these guys and it's them against the world. You can see, they're literally saying this in their TV ads. So, you know, any attack on Hillary Clinton is a worthwhile one from the Trump standpoint now.
Yeah, Michelle, you've reported on politics for a long time, and the picture that's being painted here in that Florida speech, which I think was sort of the darkest that we've ever seen from him, is that it's all rigged. There's a total and comprehensive conspiracy allied against me.
I mean, what's really terrifying is that if he loses, which it looks like he's probably going to lose, you know, the people, I've spoken to Trump supporters quite recently who still don't believe he's behind in the polls, who still believe that if he is behind in the polls, it's because the polls are rigged, who believe that the American people writ large are behind Trump. And he's telling them what I think a lot of them, what they're hearing from other sources as well, which is the only way that they lose these things, certain scheming global elites who control the media and international banking, and who sometimes have three parentheses around their names when they appear on Twitter, that because those people are going to steal it from them, because those people released these tapes to discredit Donald Trump. How are they going to react? It's setting us up, I think, for a spasm. There's a lot of groups that are going to be targeted in the spasm of violence that is likely to follow a Donald Trump loss. And I think, you know, I don't know that Jews are the ones who have the most to fear from this, you know, certainly Muslims and illegal immigrants, but I have never felt so uneasy as a Jew in America as I have watching this.
Let me say that I hope that that's not the case, right? I think we hope that the rhetoric of the campaign is heated and there's a sort of ebbing of that. But
anyway, guys, it's been amazing. We have, what, 3 weeks? 3 weeks until the big day. We have the debate tonight. Can't wait. Well, it's tonight for y'all listening. It's tomorrow night for me recording. Oh, boy, I just can't wait. But I'm going to quit rambling, guys. Thanks for all your love and support and all your comments. And make sure you check out my backup YouTube page, which is Fashy Lemington. You can find it by typing that in. And, yeah, that's really all I got. You can follow me on Twitter, @FascistLemon. I don't know what else to say. Thanks to Sven Longshanks for having me on the network. It's been a good ride so far. So anyway, guys, no matter what else you do in life, keep it white.
And I've become more and more, when you talk about nationalists, you know, say what you want. Some people say, oh, nationalists, that doesn't sound good. I want our country to be great again. I want our country to be great again.
I never thought I'd die in Rome. You put up walls of styrofoam. I traced the flame to find the fuse. Of course, it's always been the Jews. I went to school, got a job. I did my part and still got robbed. The white birth rate can't carry on. You'll be sorry when we're gone. When we came, 35 just held such better days. Days when we still felt alive. Back before we took the dive. The world is ours if we want it. And time will tell if we'll survive. I just can't wait to see the day when my people finally awake. I never thought I'd die in Rome. I don't feel pride in my own home. I love my people and wish them well. But everyone else can't go to hell. Let's close it off, board it up. Simple laws are not enough to keep these savages at bay. Mr. Trump, please take these men away. Tell if we'll survive. I just can't wait to see the day when my people finally awake. Survive. I just can't wait.